Blog Talk Radio.
Thing and one thing only. It is Thursday night, 8 o'clock, and you are listening to Off the Crossbar Live. My name is James Jameson, the guy who always talks first, the guy who always talks second when he's here.
Hello.
None other than the man, K-Ross himself. K-Ross Reed, what up, man?
I'm excited to talk free agents. I'm ready to go. The NHL got blew up today.
All right, let's go.
All right.
I think despite the efforts of many over this past weekend, Adam Orson Welles is still within society. He is still with us. Adam?
Still alive and kicking, and I've got a fully functioning liver.
Well, fully functioning might be an overstatement.
It functioned quite well this weekend.
You spent a better part of that weekend with a beer mug duct taped to your left hand.
Indeed I did. I did a few calculations, and it turns out that we had close to 200 beers between the 5.5 of us this weekend.
5.5 of us.
Yeah, well, you know, there's Nail Yakupon.
Yeah, we don't want to call out anybody, but somebody at that bachelor party earned themselves the nickname Nail Yakupon.
You know who you are.
I wasn't there, but it sounds like fun.
Excellent.
What do we got on tap for tonight, K-Ross?
We are going to jump on the free agent bandwagon like everybody else in the hockey universe.
Are we getting paid for this?
Unfortunately, unlike everybody else in the hockey universe, no, we are not.
Damn.
We're going to talk about free agents. We are going to talk about the impact that some of these new signings will have, what it may mean for some of the free agents who are left, still yet to sign, and we're going to put on our GM hats as well and talk trades. We're going to see who we think is going in what direction and what impact that will have on the respective teams as well.
Yeah.
And you never know what else that we're going to throw in there as topics. But that means that right now it is time to go off the crossbar, because I'm the only one with headphones who can hear that at the moment.
I felt it.
Adam said ting out loud, so I knew what was happening.
He did. It wasn't as good as Big Earn's off the post last night, but that was still pretty awesome. which, if you haven't listened to that one yet, go check that one. That one's up on the website, up on the Facebook as well.
Which website is that, James?
I don't know. Adam, why don't you tell the
folks? www.offthecrossbar.com, and that's crossbar with a K, folks. Crossbar with a K.
Just like every gas station attendant between here and Tromblant is well aware of at this point. That is crossbar with a K. Every Tim Hortons employee, Wendy's drive-thru worker, and bartender within 100 miles.
You didn't get t-shirts made for the trip?
No, Roberto was in China.
Is he back yet?
I don't know.
We don't know if he's back.
China hasn't complained yet, so he must be gone.
Yeah.
Somebody's over here eating all the tofu.
Tofu's good.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's really not.
All right, so big news in free agency. Matt Carl signed with the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's got to be the big news, right?
Oh, absolutely. By far.
I don't even think he made my list.
There wasn't anything bigger than that.
Since last
Thursday, was there?
No.
I heard Modano was looking at a comeback.
Yeah, I heard Modano thought about going back to this Minnesota.
Yeah, have signed Frédéric Saint-Denis to 1 year. Yeah, $650,000.
All right, so trade.
All right, so we'll see you next week.
trades, yeah.
But seriously, what are we going to start with on the free agent front? Do we start at the top?
Let's start at the top and trickle our way down.
Ooh, Reaganomics, I like it.
Yeah, I know.
So
that's why I talk first.
At the top, we have got the Twin signings in the Twin Cities, $98 million contracts, 13 years.
I would almost call it the Twin Towers, but Parise is really tiny.
Yeah, he wouldn't even be the biggest guy in this room. And that says something, actually. There's not a lot of body weight in this room.
No.
So, Zach Parise, of course, and Ryan Suter, both on the move, moving closer back to home for them, and instantly making the Minnesota Wild, certainly a contender in the Northwest Division, does it make them a player in the Western Conference? Where do they stand in terms of Stanley Cup favorites with you guys heading into next year?
I don't know about Stanley Cup favorites or anything like that, but I was always a big believer in the Minnesota Wild to begin with, well before this signing even happened.
Sure.
I put up a thing right around the end of the season where if we were talking about, you know, off-the-cuff Hart Memorial candidates kind of thing, I mentioned Mikko Koivu. Because that Minnesota Wild team was a hell of a team before he got hurt. First place in the league at the time.
And climbing. It seemed like they were getting better with everything.
And just kind of went on a complete downfall from there.
First.
I just mean they were picking up momentum still. They looked like they were tightening further defensively well into the early part of December there.
Climbing in first means spreading the gap from second. There you go.
Just breaking his balls, but okay.
Awesome.
Now we're breaking yours.
Yeah, the reverse ball breaker. Patented move.
Ball breaker reversal.
So these two guys added to that team, I'm sure Suter is going to be a hell of a guy out there on D. I'm still not necessarily sold on Zach Parise being the big offensive threat that everybody seems to, for some reason, think he is.
And don't get me wrong, this guy is a legitimate NHL sniper. This is a guy who can put up the numbers. We saw during the playoffs, he does not disappear when the pressure is on.
No.
He's a guy who does carry his own weight, who is capable of taking a game over by himself. But I actually have very, very similar sentiments. If you were to check my article today, actually on offthecrossbar.com.
I was just going to bring that up. I was going to say I read somewhere today that, coincidentally enough, Parise has very similar stats to another free agent who is kind of deemed not an elite scorer, not an elite free agent forward, yet they're almost identical in numbers.
Yeah, and that free agent, of course, being Alex Semin, who over the course of almost the exact same length of career came into the league at the same time. Semin actually played a few games fewer, not due to injury, but actually due to some issues that he had with the Russian military. In terms of having to complete his 2 years of service and getting caught up with a Russian league team over there, which actually counts towards the service.
You don't want to mess with Mother Russia.
Not if you are Russian, in particular. No. Yeah, if you've still got family there, I would just put in the 2 years in return, which is what he did.
I know all of our Russian listeners are going, yaw.
Nodding in agreement.
Yeah.
With their nice.
Yeah, it's German.
So over the course of roundabout, over the course of roundabout 500 games, Semin sitting at 469, Parise has 502 games in his career. So both guys have been around the league for quite some time. The goals coming in at 197 for Semin, 194 for Parise, 211 assists for Semin, 216 for Parise. And if you look at that point per game over the course of a career, Semin actually comes out ahead with 0.86 points per game. Parise is at 0.81. And an interesting fact, two of the biggest names on the trade market as well. If you look at Rick Nash's career point per game, he is exactly the same as Parise with 0.81. Bobby Ryan coming in at 0.78. Now, how these guys all ended up as elite first-class sort of targets for a lot of teams around the league, whereas Alex Semin did not, is beyond me. You look at the fact that Alex Semin not only put up these numbers, but put up these numbers while being a plus player in his career. If you look at the time since the lockout, Semin is a plus 63. Parise is actually a plus 57. Alex Semin, therefore, if you believe that stat, is not only a better offensive player than Parise by a hair, also a better all-around player in terms of defensive awareness. When you factor in the fact that Alex Semin was playing under Dale Hunter this past year and saw his ice time drop drastically in situational play, and the fact that he's been playing second line left wing behind Alex Ovechkin, I would think it's actually pretty easy to make the case that Alex Semin is by far the best free agent or targeted non-free agent available in this offseason.
I would agree.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at the numbers and it pays off, right? He just needs a chance, just like Stahl did in Pittsburgh. He needs a chance to be able to be there in the front and get, you know, the minutes he needs to score plenty of points, which he has totally the ability. Oh, can't speak.
Jeez.
He has the ability to score.
I think he's
points.
Still drunk.
He may be.
Perhaps.
His liver's okay, though.
Yeah, that liver's hanging on.
And you know what? I think you draw an interesting parallel there. I think you draw a very accurate point when you compare it to the Jordan Stahl situation, which is that Jordan Stahl is probably one of the best, the top six or seven centers in the National Hockey League, but was probably definitely the third best center on his own team. You look at a guy like Alex Semin, who has 40-plus goal potential and is not the best left winger on his own team. He's really just waiting for his opportunity to shine. And if he goes somewhere like Detroit, which is the rumored number one destination, and he gets alongside Pavel Datsyuk, I think you're going to see Semin next year have a significantly better year than Rick Nash, Zach Parise, or Bobby Ryan, regardless of where they end up.
Well, what if he were to end up in Detroit with Rick Nash?
Rick Nash is never going to end up in Detroit, though.
Why not?
Same division.
I think, yeah, you get into a divisional thing there. I also think that when you look at Detroit right now, they were looking to make a splash in free agency. I think they wanted both Parise and Suter. Assumed that they would get one of them because every free agent takes a long, hard look at Detroit, and they do have a very appealing system. Right now, they're left playing catch-up. I think with Nick Lidstrom retiring and Brad Stewart moving out of town, Yuri Hudler on his way out, of course, going to Calgary just yesterday. If you make a move for Rick Nash and it has to be through trade, I think you're creating holes elsewhere. Right now, wing isn't really their number one concern. They've got some wingers in the system. It would be nice to have Rick Nash, and certainly Detroit perennially has the depth to make a run at every player available. I think what it would cost them right now is simply too much. Had they landed Suter and they had that hole clunked up and filled nicely, maybe they could move some elements. I don't see him going there, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit later on when we talk trades. And
oh, no, that's all I have to say. that's all my facts.
Next topic.
So what do you think? Does this vault Minnesota?
To be honest with you, no. I think that this vaults them, certainly. I think it takes them from competing for 6, 7, 8 to competing for 4, 5.
You don't see those putting them?
I don't think it makes them better than the Vancouver Canucks, particularly with Corey Schneider moving to the forefront there. I think he's going to be more reliable than Luongo has proven to be. I also like the moves that Vancouver made. They overpaid for Garrison, but they got him. You know what? The West is tough, and the West is deep. I think that it makes them a playoff team, guaranteed. And I think that 2 years from now, when you see the development of Matt Dumba, their draft pick from this year, and Michael Granlund, who, of course, was a blue-chip prospect last year, he's getting very close to being NHL-ready. I think we'll probably see him with the Minnesota Wild at some point during the season if he doesn't make the team right out of camp. I think 2, 3 years from now, absolutely. In the immediate term, no. I see Minnesota finishing in the 4-5 spot in the Western Conference next year.
This move to me basically said to me that kind of in the next 3 years, the Western Conference is going to be the toughest place to play ever.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody in the Pacific Division, you're going to have to win your division to make the playoffs at this point. Because now you're going to have to contend with the Minnesota Wild, the Vancouver Canucks, Detroit, St. Louis, Chicago. Now you throw Edmonton into that mix in a couple of years.
Oh, wait, you forgot somebody. those guys that just won the cup.
Yeah,
like,
L.A.
They don't even come to the top of your head when you're thinking Western
Conference. They're in that Pacific Division. And so if you want to make the playoffs, even if you're the L.A. Kings,
you have to
win that division now.
Yeah.
Because those other seven spots are going to be hard.
And you know what? It was the same thing in the Northwest this year, where only the division champion ended up in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, and so, it, crazy. You know, Colorado's only going to get better.
Absolutely, especially, again, they've got some big signings in the works as well.
Yeah, the Colorado's made some really good moves this offseason. They're just growing that young talent.
Yeah.
And whatnot. And now you've got Minnesota, who was a great team last year up until Mikko Koivu got hurt. So I'm expecting fantastic things from this year. I think they're easily going to make the playoffs. That's not a problem.
Well, I think they're an elite goaltender away and probably one or two solid defensemen. And I think Matt Dumba is going to be that number two defenseman as he comes up. I think within two or three years, yeah, you will see him in a top defensive pairing with Suter in Minnesota, for sure.
Backstrom's a legit goal. He's a good goaltender. He needs a little bit of refinement, stuff like that, but he's a good goaltender.
He's a good goaltender, but if you need a little bit of refinement at the age of 34...
Whatever. But you're right. Defensive-wise, they've got Ryan Suter now. I mean, who else on their jumps? Tom Gilbert? Really? I mean, after that...
Yeah, Clayton Stoner has proven himself to be a very good player over the last few years.
As a guy who has watched a lot of Tom Gilbert over the last couple of years, he's very underrated in his abilities as a shutdown defenseman.
Yeah.
He is not an offensive talent by any stretch of the imagination, and that is one of the main reasons why Edmonton traded away. But he is a fairly solid shutdown defenseman for the role that he was given in Edmonton, and that was his job. It was try and go out there and shut down the other player.
Yeah.
It just, he was almost always on the ice, always ended up against the other team's best forwards, and he didn't have anybody necessarily from the forward position backing him up.
Yeah.
And not to take anything away from the other defensemen that are in Edmonton, but he was often left out there by himself as a defender. Like, once they paired him with Ladislav Smead, that was an awesome pairing.
That was very
for the Oilers. They both did a hell of a job, and so a lot of people don't give Tom Gilbert nearly enough credit for his defensive abilities. He is a really good defenseman.
Right. So you've got 1.5 D pairings, right? Yeah. That more so than goaltending. That's going to be their main issue
for right now. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
And they drafted to fill that hole, and that's the process. Luckily, Parise is young, Suter's young. They've got the time to grow into that. Right. And I would also, and I'm a huge fan. We talk about underrated defensemen. I think Clayton Stoner is fantastic. I think the kid is a monster. He's what, 6'3", 230 or 2? I mean, he's a big kid, plays solid defensively, and gets the first pass out of his zone very well. He doesn't put up a ton of numbers, but, I compare him to a young Roman Hamrlich when I watch him play, a little bigger and a little stronger.
6'3", 225.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, he's a big dude who does see the ice very well and plays shutdown defense. And a lot like you were saying, James, in the last few years, very similar to the Edmonton situation a couple years ago, they just didn't have the players around him, so you look bad. Unless you're an offensive star,
exactly.
If you're a defenseman on a bad team, you look bad.
No matter what, you're going to be a bad defenseman.
Exactly.
But you shift that role onto a better team, and you're not necessarily the number one guy anymore, because in no way is Tom Gilbert going to be the number one.
But he's a great second pair defenseman.
He'll be a fantastic third or fourth defenseman.
Yeah, if you're looking for a guy to get 18 to 20 minutes a night, he'll give it to you, and it's going to be solid minutes.
Oh, for sure. And so I'm confident in Minnesota's D right now.
Really?
No, man, because
where do you
think more so?
Yeah, no, I'm okay with it, because you know what? Really impressed me.
But if you look at them, and you're right.
Yeah,
they're a team that plays a hell of a defensive system.
Well, and that's, you know what, it all comes full circle back to the New Jersey Devils once again with Jacques Lemaire. I mean, that's one of the main reasons that they were able to break the ice with Zach Parise moving forward. Obviously, he did want to go home, but when you've got that kind of connection with an organization, you know, that speaks a lot. It's all about networking, whether you're in the world of business or in the world of hockey.
Cool.
Yep. So I'm just saying, I believe in the Wild.
So where do you have?
I was a believer in the Wild before these two signings. I just think this helps them even more.
Yeah.
I will say they will win the division.
Really?
I think
it will be better than the Canucks.
Yes.
I think you're wrong. It is
still Vancouver's division to lose.
Yeah, it is still Vancouver's division to lose, but I don't know. I felt this year was seeing how Vancouver ended it this year. I feel like something's up with that team, and that the direction that they were going, I think something might be wrong in the room over there.
Interesting. A shitty goalie.
Not just the goalie. Because I'll be the first one, and I've said it many, many times on the show before, that I'm not a fan of Roberto Luongo. I think he's a ridiculously overrated goaltender. However, I don't think anything about that series with LA was nearly his fault.
No, I completely agree with that.
There is something very wrong in that room. I don't know what. I don't know what it is, but just something felt like that team was not clicking like they were the year before. The year before, when they lost to Boston, that team clicked. You know, yeah. Ryan Kesler was on his game. As much as I hate Ryan Kesler, he had a hell of a playoff.
Oh,
2 years ago,
he was the best player in the playoffs individually 2 years ago.
And so, just something didn't feel right about the way they fizzled out. And we've had a conversation about it maybe a month before the playoffs started.
Yeah, they didn't.
Like, Vancouver couldn't score a goal.
They limped in.
They were the number one seed, but did not deserve that.
I still have
whatsoever. The way they ended that season, because a lot of people just look and go, okay, well, fine, yeah, they got ousted in five games by the eventual Stanley Cup champions, and whatever, it was all Luongo's fault here and there and that. But you go back 2 months before playoffs started.
Schneider lost
that team. That team was not the Vancouver Canucks that everybody thinks they are. That team started going downhill well before the playoffs started. And I don't think that they're solid enough going forward.
Interesting.
I think they're going to be a great team. They'll probably finish in the four spot.
I have the exact opposite. I have them flipped. I think Vancouver will once again be a regular season team because they've got enough skill. They've got enough talent on the team to win the games when it doesn't come down to crunch time every single night. I think they've got enough talent to put them over the edge. But when it comes playoff time, I think they probably will disappear again. Unless Schneider turns out to be everything he can be. Because that's really the X factor in Vancouver right now. Is you've got a guy who has not played more than 30 games in a year before.
Can he do it?
Yeah, can he do it? Where's his endurance? All signs point to the fact that he is the next great goaltender to come up through the Vancouver system. Is he?
And that's why I'm saying there are too many factors for me that would be able to place them at the top of that division. Because if Minnesota can stay healthy, granted you could say the same thing about Vancouver, you could say about any team in the league.
Any team stays healthy and two teams in their division don't, and they're in the playoffs.
Exactly. But this is more specific to if Mikko Koivu can stay healthy.
Which he should be able to.
I think Minnesota is easily the best team in that division.
They have to score a massive amount. Last year, they finished with the second worst goal differential in the Western Conference. You're right. Goaltending is obviously a factor. They have 1.5 lines of defensemen. These guys are going to have to put up a hell of a lot of goals.
Yeah.
They need to pick up a defenseman. They have 23 men on their roster right now that are signed, and they've got $1.3 million in cap space left. If they don't find themselves a solid defenseman, they're not even going to finish fourth. They're going to be lower.
I have full confidence in Minnesota.
And you know what? I think for me, going back, I think it comes down to that defense, and it does come back to the goaltending situation. I don't think Minnesota's season hinges on Nick Backstrom. I think his time has passed, to be perfectly honest with you. I think you're going to see somewhere around Christmas time, Josh Harding start to take the lion's share of starts, and I think Minnesota will go as he goes. If it doesn't happen sooner, if it doesn't happen straight out of camp, because there are a lot of teams knocking the door and kicking the tires on Josh Harding as a number one,
mm-hmm.
Toronto Maple Leafs included. So, you know, maybe, but then you just have the Corey Schneider situation again.
Yeah.
How much can you trust him? You've seen flashes of a guy who's been very good in flashes. But it happens. Like, I always go back to 1997 and Jim Carrey. Guy wins a Vezina. And then goes on to be a movie star, I think. Like,
I don't know.
I, where did he go?
Yeah, but, you know, I hear everybody saying goaltending's a question, obviously, defense, whatnot. I think the system that's in place in Minnesota, I think they can get away with not having spectacular defense because their forwards have clearly bought into the defensive system.
Fun.
They may have had one of the worst goal differentials in the league last year, but they also had one of the worst second halves of the season
in history.
They
considering where they were and where they ended.
Yeah, like I think it was either December 27th or sometime in January when they just kind of spiraled out. And those guys were first place pretty much at that halfway point. They had quite possibly the worst second half season that you could possibly have. So clearly, guys like Danny Heatley and the rest of the crew that's over there have bought into, okay, you know what? We got to come back a little bit. We may not go score six goals a game. We may only win a game 2-1 or 1-0, but we're still going to win that game. And I hope they're going to go LA. Yeah. And hey,
but it works for LA. Jonathan Quick.
No, they don't have Jonathan Quick, but they have a better. I think they have a more, well, obviously not once Sutter came in, but looking at the way those two teams played the first half of the season, Minnesota was a better team.
Yeah. Look at the more recent history.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. They got a coach that put in a proper system.
But that's the
Minnesota was playing that system, and they had basically their key guy of that system taken out.
But you know what? That's
now you're adding two right now. Way better. Now you're adding two, like, a pillar on defense and a good quick forward that put Parise on a line with Danny Heatley and is Setoguchi still over there?
Setoguchi's
yeah,
there, yep.
Put Heatley, Setoguchi, and Parise on one line. You're going to have a hell of a scoring line right there.
I would rather see Parise skating with Mikko.
Yep. Mikko, all the way. Mikko,
I would put Mikko Koivu, Zach Parise, and
I would say put Parise with Heatley just because I don't think Heatley has the same work ethic that a guy like Zach Parise has, so it would kind of necessarily somewhat cancel it out.
Yeah, but why not then just put Heatley, Koivu, and Parise, and then come with, what, Setoguchi, Pierre-Marc Bouchard, and... It's got to be, what, Cal Clutterbuck, maybe? Who do you have? And that's, you know, there's not a lot there when you get deep into those forward lines either. You've got some young talent, but I don't know. I think it makes them a significantly better team. I don't think it makes them a favorite. Oh, well, I think
they're going to be better than Vancouver, but they're not going to be the best team in the Western Conference.
No, certainly not.
I still think that belongs to whoever wins the Central. Which, if Chicago can get a goaltender, it's going to be Chicago. If they can't get a goaltender, it's probably going to be St. Louis.
It's the playoffs. Like, it's that tight.
Yeah. Like, if Chicago can get their goaltender, you know, because I know they were really heavy trying to go after Brodeur there. If they can get anybody who can stop a puck better than Corey Crawford right now, easily. Chicago will be my number one team coming out of that Western Conference. Not a problem. If not, St. Louis.
I think it's going to be St. Louis.
What about Nashville?
I think St. Louis is much better than them. With Weber taking off, with the Radulov situation being a mess, with them having two Kostitsyns on the roster.
I feel really bad because I think this is going to be the first pin in many to kind of...
It's going to be
the unraveling of the Nashville Predators.
The unraveling of the mustard yellow sweater.
It's a damn shame that Pecorine is going to have to be in the middle of that, too, because he should be somewhere where he can win with people.
Yeah, but he's signed long-term at this point.
It depends on what they... If they can lock up Shea Weber, they're going to get Shea Weber as a restricted free agent this year, at least on a one-year deal. If they can, like, completely throw every dollar they've got, maximum term, maximum dollar, at Shea Weber, and it may well cost them $100 million over 10 years to keep him there, then they've got a chance of attracting more free agents in to fill those holes.
Yeah, Pecorine signed through 2019.
Yeah, so I mean, look, they've got the tools to build around. They really do. I don't like Tutu walking out the door. I know that they re-signed Gostad, but I like what Tutu brings to a team. I like it a lot. I mean, he is.
You can check out those thoughts on what's that website again?
Offthecrossbar.com.
That's Crossbar with a K. Calm with a C, though. and what about another fantastic signing, in my opinion, for the Minnesota, Zenon Konopka coming in? I think that sort of flew under the radar with Parise and Suter coming in. I think he was a very valuable member of really every team he's been on over the last couple of years. You look at what he did in Ottawa.
Fantastic in the faceoff, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at what he's done in New York. And you talk about a role player, a guy who's all legs, penalty killing, a guy who will throw down to defend his teammates. really answers the bell quite well. And when you're looking for value for your dollar in terms of a versatile player, a third or fourth liner who could, in theory, play second line minutes in the case of injury or anything like that, I really like that signing quite a bit. It gives him a lot of depth. And I look at him as actually very similar to Cal Clutterbuck. Not nearly as cool a mustache. That guy's got the best stash since Landy McDonald, man.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Have you seen it? Cal Clutterbuck's mustache is downright old-timey.
Let's check this out. Let's Google.
Oh.
You guys talk amongst yourself.
Talk amongst yourselves. All right. Well, what are we talking about?
Winnipeg picked himself up a bit of a goalie in El Montoya, but not much of one.
Good yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, absolutely. Yeah. You bring up Winnipeg.
Yeah.
I did. Just did.
Olli Jokinen.
Seriously?
Yeah. Olli Jokinen goes to Winnipeg, as does Alex Ponikarovsky.
For
Jokinen, 2-year, 4.5 years. Yeah.
$4.5 million for Olli Jokinen.
You know what? If you're going on market value, there's a guy who puts up 55 to 60 points a year and is a big, strong center. Has his off years. Absolutely. Looks like he's floating at moments. Like, no doubt about it.
I like to think that his off years are the years he doesn't play with Jerome Iginla.
Sure, but you know what? Let's put him on a line then with Brian Little, Alex Ponikarovsky, Evander Kane, Andrew Ladd. There's a lot of players. There's a lot of depth in Winnipeg. They've got a lot of potential 20-goal scorers and not a whole lot of potential 35-goal scorers. I mean, I like what they're doing up front. I like what they're doing in net, and I like the way their defense is coming along. To be perfectly honest with you, I'm all right with that signing.
Really?
I don't know. I think it's a slight overpay.
Yeah, I think they overpaid a little bit.
But they needed a center. And trust me, as a guy who follows the Montreal Canadiens, there ain't a lot of them out there right now.
No. But, I don't know, three and a half, I would have been like, all right, you know what? That's a good deal. Four and a half, something about that just seems like...
A little bit too Caberle?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
Yeah. But I also think he really...
Like, three and a half, and I'm like, oh, you know what? Like, good on Winnipeg. Like, yeah, man.
Is it the fact that he's playing in Calgary with Jerome Iginla, or is it the fact that he's playing in Canada? In an interview this morning, Olli Jokinen said, listen, I love playing in Canada. I love, especially compared to, obviously, his time with the Rangers, his time with the Florida Panthers.
Well, he did really good in Florida, though.
He did well, but he said he didn't enjoy his time as much.
He didn't enjoy it, but he put up better numbers.
Yeah, he was a very good player. But maybe that's what he gets when he goes to Winnipeg again. Maybe he gets that sort of surroundings.
You know what? I say let's hope, because I've got nothing against Olli Jokinen, and I think every Canadian on the planet wants to see Winnipeg do good.
Of course, absolutely, yeah. And that's
I would love to see Winnipeg in the playoffs next year. That would be. I would almost want a road trip out there and not get a ticket.
Because
I guarantee you will never, ever get a ticket to a Winnipeg playoff game.
You know, I know you wouldn't.
That's going to be sold out even before they make the playoffs.
It will be. Honestly, like they will absolutely have their pre-sales in place if they're even sniffing at the playoff position come the end of the season.
That'd be
And I really like their goaltending situation.
Andre Pavlik
is a fantastic goaltender.
TSN Play of the Year.
That's true. That is true. I had forgotten about that.
I guess the TSN Player of the Year.
And you talk about...
Beat out Jordan Eberle.
You talk about...
Jason Spezza. Well, I think he beat out Jason Spezza in the final. Spezza beat out Eberle in the semifinals.
Yeah, I think that is exactly it. And if
that's Spezza player.
If Spezza would have put the puck in the net himself, he would have had it.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, that was a nice pass, but you're not finishing that with a backhand flick.
Yeah, you don't win the Player of the Year on an assist.
No, it was a nice assist.
It was a really nice assist.
And deserving of second place.
But you don't win the Player of the Year on an assist.
But you talk about depth of defense being a problem in Minnesota. I see the exact opposite going on in Winnipeg right now. You go down the list of what they've got in that roster. Zach Bogosian, Dustin Byfuglien, Tobias Enstrom, Ron Hainsey. They are making moves. They've got a top four that is as good as any top four in the league, and I would argue a top six that's probably better. I would argue that their 5-6 slot is better than some teams' 3-4 spots. They have got the depth, and they don't have any big names outside of Dustin Byfuglien. Bogosian is making a name for himself. Of course, he came with a lot of pressure being a high draft pick. Yeah, Tobias Enstrom on his way up. And these are guys who were really flying completely under the radar in Atlanta and I think are benefiting quite a bit from the media attention that they're getting since moving to Winnipeg.
Is Wheeler still over there?
Yeah, Blake Wheeler's still in the system.
Next year.
I've always been a big thumbs up to Blake Wheeler.
Yeah, another very underrated player. Lots of speed down the wing.
I thought he was great in Boston.
He was fantastic in Boston. And like another guy who disappeared in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Which is too bad. A lot of guys, like I said, so many guys on that Winnipeg roster. Brian Little had a 35-goal season in Atlanta, and nobody's ever heard of him. You know, Max Pacioretty gets 31, and he's a friggin' hero here in Montreal. They're ready to throw a parade just because they haven't gotten to throw one in 20 years.
Yeah, you know. 20 more, you never know.
But I look at Winnipeg as a team that's going to surprise some people. Nick Antropov, Olli Jokinen, Evander Kane, Andrew Ladd, Brian Little, Ponikarovsky, Blake Wheeler.
I like the Ponikarovsky
across
signing.
The board. Oh, me too.
I really like that one. Yeah. I think he's very underrated as well.
He is. Well, he didn't have very many good years in Toronto, and that was sort of his.
But that's the thing. Like, you have a bad year in Toronto, you're kind of
you're done.
Exactly,
you're
and
done.
That
like. Yeah. Phil Kessel has a decent year, and he's a friggin' a scapegoat.
When we talk about having a bad year in Toronto, but still being able to be a good hockey player somewhere else and not getting the credit for it, there's a name that jumps out to me, a guy who I've been a fan of since his junior years, who is currently an unrestricted free agent, which I'd love the Oilers to go after.
And that is?
Carlo Koliakovo.
Carlo Koliakovo. Old bad knees, Carlo Koliakovo.
You know, guy, yeah, he's got some injury problems. He did not have a very, like, he had almost as bad a time as you could have in Toronto. But he was also in Toronto right at the, okay, the Leafs are easily the worst team in the league.
Oh, yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, it's a bad time to get there.
I like Carlo Koliakovo, and as someone who's also seen him.
He's been really good in St. Louis.
He's been good in St. Louis. And again, I've seen him obviously since his junior days playing for Team Canada at the World Junior. He was fantastic. The year, when was that, 2003? He was there with like Marc-Andre Fleury and those guys,
yeah.
I believe. I just have problems with a guy whose health is so unreliable. I think he's averaging in the mid-50s for games per season in his career.
Yeah, and I'm not saying he's
not a tough guy. He's a great puck mover. He's a great shot from the point.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he may
fit that Edmonton system.
That's why I'm thinking if you can get him for not too expensive, obviously, because you can't go spend too much money on a guy who is literally hurt almost one-third of your season.
I would venture you couldn't even offer him more than 2.2 or 2.3 a season.
But if you can go pick
if
him
you
up.
You get him, yeah.
If you can pick him up for around 2, I'd even go as high as 2.5.
Really? No term, though, I assume. You got to.
No, like I'd say
2-3 years
tops on that one. But you bring him into that system, he's a good, solid, puck-moving defenseman when he's healthy.
You put him in, your four slot, I would assume?
Yeah, I'm putting him in my four slot. I'm putting him on a line with Whitney on the back end. Or
there's something very – yeah, I agree. He would be a great partner with Ryan Whitney. Great compliment. Adam has just discovered the pens that my wife Dale took home from the hospital. They actually have hand sanitizer in the top. That's what you're spraying on your elbow there. You're shooting yourself in the face with hand sanitizer. So, yeah, there's two of them. You can have one if you'd like.
Sweet.
There you go.
I think he would fit really nice into that four slot.
You know what? That's an interesting – proposition. I would never have placed it, but now that you've said it out loud, I agree with you.
Because you put him on a line with Whitney. Whitney is,
I like that.
Whitney's a solid defenseman.
Whitney's the forgotten defenseman in the Edmonton system right now.
Yeah.
He's sort of the forgotten young star. He's still only in his mid-20s.
He's also been hurt.
Exactly.
A ridiculous amount. Like he could barely walk for half of last season.
When he came up through, it was with Pittsburgh, right? He was pegged to be part of that wave that came when Crosby hit the NHL. He was supposed to be one of the other elite young stars coming up through their system. And I think he's shown flashes of that since he's been in Edmonton. But it's just that health consistency again.
Yeah, and obviously you're looking kind of tough right there if you're throwing two guys on the ice at the same time who are fairly injury-prone.
Yeah, what if they bump into each other?
But I also think that, you know, you have – I'm okay with keeping Smead in, one of your top two. I'm not quite sure who you're looking at as your second top pairing at that point. You could throw Justin Schultz up there right now. I think he's a little young to be throwing him up there in your top pair. That's why I'd like to drop him back into the 5-6 slot, give him shifts here and there. And then I would be more comfortable
with him in the 4 slot, to be perfectly honest with you. I would like, because he's the kind of kid, he's going to be a workhorse, and you've got to get him his minutes. You got to realize, coming into the league, he's not 18, he's 22.
I know, and that's why I'm saying you put him in the 5 slot, because it's inevitable that either Whitney or Koliakbo is going to get hurt.
Fair enough.
He's going to be spending a lot of time on whoever is healthy of those two, and he's also going to be your number one power play guy.
Well, I would say number two power play guy, and that's what I was getting at, was I was going to say that
Whitney's 29, by the way.
Whitney's 29? Yeah. Is he that old?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. I take it all back. No. No, but you know what? 29, but in theory, if he's healthy, not a lot of miles on him. Just because of the injury. And that's the thing about guys who, they have one problematic injury, they get the right surgery, they get the right repair job, they come in at the age of 27, they play like a 24-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of Whitney's, how about Ray Whitney and Jaromir Jagr ending up in Dallas?
Absolutely. And you know what? I should give a shout-out to anyone listening in New Brunswick. Eric O'Brien, personal trainer guy I used to work with, really wanted to hear what we had to say about the Dallas Stars this week. And also, I'm going to do a little something shameless for him here. If anybody is listening in Fredericton, and I know a lot of you are, go check out Eric. He's at OFC Fitness. He is a fantastic personal trainer, probably one of the best I've ever worked with, particularly for fat loss clients. Anybody out there looking for it, the guy knows his stuff. Look him up. Stay away from the bigger gyms. Stay away from the bigger chains. Go check him out, Eric O'Brien at OFC Fitness. So, Eric, we're going to talk about the Stars for you. Big winners, in my opinion.
Ray Whitney, 2 years, $4.5 million a year at the age of, what is he, like 40 now? Yeah, he just turned 40.
Just turned 40. But not a regular 40. Here's a guy who was a point per game player last year. Lands himself a 2-year, $9 million deal at the age of 40.
77 points last year. Sick.
Fantastic.
And speaking of 40-plusers, Jagr signs a 1-year, $4.55 million deal there as well.
Old Jeremiah Jagr.
It's his second choice, so he wanted to be a Hab.
Yeah, we'll get into that. When we get into the Habs stuff, I would like to dig into this Jaromir Jagr situation.
We will get into that right after the break, that's for sure. Don't worry.
And I think, and again, another forgotten move, Dallas picks up what I think could be their most valuable acquisition of the offseason in Derek Roy, coming over from Buffalo, giving up Steve Ott, which does hurt. Steve Ott's a very well-rounded player, great physical presence, a great locker room guy. Really, honestly, what Buffalo needed scares me as a Habs fan to be having to see him, 10-plus times a year. But getting Derek Roy in return, now there's a playmaker. You want to talk about a top line, you're looking at Jamie Benn, Derek Roy, and Jaromir Jagr. Louis Erickson has had 3-plus 20-goal seasons. Looking at that second line, you've got Michael Ryder, Brendan Morrow still there, Eric Nystrom. Vernon Fiddler has turned himself into a legitimate NHL player over the last couple of years, easily competing for number two line minutes. Dallas just became very, very interesting offensively. And I think bringing in Jaromir Jagr was key to a lot of these young guys they have, the Louis Eriksons, the Jamie Benns. Look at what he did with Claude Giroux last year. And if you think Giroux's season was in any way not attributable to Jagr's presence, you better give your head a shake. Jagr made that line. He doesn't have the quickness, but it was his hockey smarts, his ability to move the puck on the power play, his vision on the ice. There's a guy who legitimately had a claim to being the best hockey player on earth for a long stretch of his career. I mean, there was a time, I think it was between 1980 and 2000, nobody won a scoring title that wasn't named Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, or Jaromir Jagr. That's pretty damn good company.
Yeah. If you're going to be mentioned with two guys,
those two aren't the worst two you can be mentioned with.
And he's now the highest paid player. Oh, no, sorry, after Goligoski. He's making $500,000 less than Goligoski.
Yeah. So,
sorry,
speaking of Goligoski, I mean, I like Kari Lehtinen quite a bit in the Dallas net.
Yes.
Again, coming out of Atlanta was really not
well received in his first couple of years, had a terrible team in front of him. And much like a defenseman, as a goaltender, it's hard to look good with a bad team in front of you. Unless you're Roberto Luongo in Florida, or Thomas Mokoun in Florida, or, well, anybody in Florida, up until Jose Theodore, who actually managed to look bad with a good team in front of him this year.
Another good example, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury was not a bad goalie when he came into the league, but the Penguins were a terrible hockey team.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. A guy who came into his own as the team did. Like, and I think you're going to see that happen with Kari Lehtinen as well.
So that's
the only thing that concerns me.
They need a reliable backup.
That and the fact that they've only got five defensemen rostered right now. Yep. I'd like to know what's going to happen on Dallas's blue line. Alex Goligoski is a stud. I've known this since his days in Pittsburgh. I picked him up as a fantasy hockey late season pickup one year. Was amazed at what he was able to do on the power play. But who else is back there? I mean, Stefan Robidas is 140 years old. Who's Philip Larson? You know, Trevor Daley is a legitimate number four on a lot of teams in the NHL.
But right now they've got 19 rostered players and just over $20 million in cap space. So I mean, if they
will spend, and Nieuwendyk is on a mission right now to spend. He absolutely is, and I think that's what you're going to see them use a lot of that money on. When they lost Mike Ribeiro, when they lost Steve Ott, they didn't necessarily lose a lot, in my opinion, getting Jaromir Jagr and Ray Whitney back.
Ribeiro went to Washington.
Because that's what they needed in Washington, was an offensive player who didn't play defense well and doesn't understand system hockey. Because Dale Hunter had a great time working with those guys this year. I'm sure his...
If he plays on the line with Ovechkin, that's going to be the flashiest line in all of hockey.
It's true. You're going to see some awesome celebrations. And you're also going to see some shaking helmets from the other end of the ice when the opposition scores.
They will combine for some of the nicest goals in the NHL, I have no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. But
I also don't doubt that Washington still isn't going to be that good.
If you could win a game with highlight reel goals, the Washington Capitals would have been fine the last couple of years. They would have had some cup banners in the rafters. They just plain don't.
Yeah.
And I don't really trust a lot of their situations right now. I think they overachieved quite a bit last year under Dale Hunter. I think he was probably the best coach possible for the situation that they found themselves in. I don't know what they're going to do this year. But getting back to Dallas, where do you guys see Dallas this year with the moves that they've made?
I see them contending for the lead in that...
Pacific Division?
In that Pacific Division.
Well, yeah, they're going to be San Jose because you hate San Jose.
Well, yeah, San Jose is easily the worst team.
You don't think Phoenix is... without Ray Whitney, who's going to...
Without Ray Whitney, Hey, Ray Whitney, that's going to be a huge dent over there.
But, I mean, L.A., they're going to be better than L.A.?
Well, I say they're going to contend.
Contend.
They're going to win.
They're going to contend.
I say no. No.
Well, except
right now. Because I still wholeheartedly believe that the NHL should have just said, okay, you know what? Dallas deserves to be in the playoffs this year. San Jose, you guys were terrible, and just take them out, because Dallas was a way better team than San Jose was. That would have been a hell of a series, Dallas and St. Louis. I would have loved to have seen that. So I was always, I thought Dallas was already a pretty good hockey team. The addition of Ray Whitney alone is going to help that team a ridiculous amount.
Bring back Madonna.
Madonna wants to go play in Minnesota.
That would be stupid, though.
Why not?
He's a star. Not really, sir. You're a star.
Sorry, I can't Facebook and be on the radio at the same time. I got a little distracted there.
That's all good.
Turns out Eric O'Brien is actually in New Brunswick right now listening. So
awesome stuff.
Loves the shout out.
But yeah, so I'm saying they're going to...
I hope he likes us on Facebook.
He does. Just did, actually.
He did, actually, yeah. I
just did.
I just got the notification.
So that's what it takes, eh? Free advertising, all right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Phoenix is
because LA is a
situation.
Good team, but are they going to be able to be a great team over the course of the 82 game
LA?
Season?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
LA will win the Western Conference this year.
Oh, the whole conference.
Yeah. They will be. Listen, this is a team that found their stride.
I think they're going to finish not far behind LA.
You look who?
Dallas.
Dallas. Really?
Yeah.
I thought Dallas sneaking into a playoff
spot. I think they're going to. I'll put Dallas 5 points behind L.A., which in my mind is still not that far behind.
Yeah.
And I will put them 3 up on Phoenix.
I am going to honestly have to reserve judgment to see how they fill the
defensive
holes.
And Anaheim and San Jose.
Yeah, San Jose's window is closing. Anaheim is looking like they may be gearing up again in 2 or 3 years.
It all
in youth in the system.
Well, I'm going to touch base on Anaheim once we get into the trade section.
Okay, awesome.
Because
let's do that.
That's there's something weird going on in Anaheim right now.
But for Dallas, while we're on the topic, I got to wait and see who they bring in as a defenseman. Are they going to bring in a number two to Goligoski, or will they bring in a number one to put Goligoski in the number two slot? I think no matter who you bring in, he's your guy on the power play for sure. He's a stud on the blue line with the man advantage. Who is available defensively when you go down the list of free agents? There's not a whole lot, and that's what scares me about the Dallas situation right now is they don't have a ton of tradable assets, and there aren't enough offensive defensemen or elite-level defensemen out there on the market right now.
No.
So that's what scares me. I think they've got the capacity to do it. Obviously, Adam just said they've got the $20 million in cap space, which is fantastic. I think Nieuwendyk is going to make a solid run at anyone he can get. But I think you see it happening in Tampa Bay right now with Matt Carl getting, was it $26.5 million or something, or $29.5 million over 6 years?
Matt Carl, what was his average?
I had it written down somewhere in front of me.
I checked it. I think it was 5 a year.
I thought it was more than that. There it
5.5.
6 year, $33.5 million.
5.5 a year.
That's an overpayment, man. Like, that's... See, and if Steve Yzerman is overpaying for talent, you know it has to be done. It's risky right now in the defensive market. It just scares me. The situation is scary.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a defenseman.
I still say they're going to finish about 5 points behind L.A. and miss the playoffs.
If I had to pick right now, not knowing what's going to happen, I'll put them in the seventh slot. I like Kari Lehtinen quite a bit. I think they'll patch together some defense, and I mean, obviously, I love them up front. I do have them as one of the four biggest winners in free agency this year. I think so far they've done great work with what they've lost and what they were able to bring back in. They brought themselves back to level, which a lot of teams can't say.
Obviously, all this stuff is contingent on what the hell happens during the season.
Of course.
They can make some mid-season moves and whatnot right now. But looking at the team that they have right now, I'll put them 5 points behind L.A. and out of the playoffs.
Which is why I was very surprised to see them let Sheldon Surrey leave. Did not see that coming. I understand that he's a little bit of a liability on the defensive side of the puck. But the guy had a breakthrough season again. It seems like his career is definitely one of peaks and valleys, but I feel like his time in Dallas and the way he fought his way back through there was a real peak.
I think a lot of guys, a lot of teams are hesitant on Surrey because he doesn't have the greatest of reputations in the room.
That's true.
There was a big, he was a big signing in Edmonton, and when that fell apart, and as quickly as it did fall apart, because he was very public about the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
And teams don't like that. Teams don't want a guy who's going to come out and just criticize them in the media like that.
That's definitely the truth. You're right about
and
that.
And so, maybe he wasn't a jackass in Dallas, but maybe he also wasn't the best guy in the room over there.
Maybe that lies a little bit better in California, where the teams tend to fly under the radar anyway, and no publicity is bad publicity. And if nothing else, they got more playmates out there. He just keeps marrying them.
All right. So, if you're GM of your favorite team, who are the top five guys that are still available that you're going after?
Do I have to be the GM of my favorite team, or can I be a GM in general?
No, of your favorite team.
To be perfectly honest with you, I don't know that there are five players left that I would go after. Just because of the holes that Montreal has. If I'm going to be the GM of my favorite team, I don't think I'm filling many holes without overspending. Let's just say then, for
three.
The sake of argument...
How about three?
We'll
cut it down.
I'm going after Alex Semin. I think he's the best free agent available. I think he's a better player than Zach Parise. I think he's a better player than... I got to stop that sentence partway through. I think depending on which hole you're looking to fill,
Who's a better player then?
He is a more valuable option to half the teams in the league than Rick Nash. He is younger, plays the same position, puts up more points per game, has a better plus-minus. I know Rick Nash doesn't have any teammates, and I know all that. But you know what? A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, and Semin has proven himself time and time again to put up points. He moved to a defensive system playing second-line left wing last year and had a down year. You can see my finger quotes if you were in the room. But he still puts up 55 points. He still puts up more than 20 goals. He still comes out as a plus player. He deserves his chance to be a number one left winger somewhere in the league. I'm taking him.
Final answer.
Final answer. Fact.
Fact.
I'd say Sam is also a pretty solid choice. I mean, you can't go wrong. The guy needs a place to come out and shine, be a first liner, and he will and get 40 goals a season. Not a problem. I mean, what is it? This team was Timo Solani's a free agent. That'd be kind of cool to see him there.
He's not going anywhere. He's not Anaheim.
Yeah, well, you know. But yeah, I guess it'd have to be.
All right. So if we're going as GM of my favorite team, I'll be GM of the Oilers over here. My free agents that I'm signing, obviously, got to go defense with the Oilers. So I've already mentioned Carlo Koliakovo.
Yep, he's pretty.
I'd be okay with signing him if I get him for the right deal on the right term. Bringing back a former Oiler who was there for about half a season, maybe three quarters of a season, Curtis Foster.
Really?
Yep.
Curtis Foster.
I'm surprised that he hasn't found his way back to Minnesota.
He was with Minnesota at the end of last season.
That's what I mean. I'm surprised he has not yet
signed.
Yeah, I maybe that's where they fill that gap.
I would like to see him back in Edmonton. I've been a fan of him since his days in Jersey and as he fluttered around the league and whatnot. Going the forward route, I think Edmonton needs some help on the third line. So I'm taking a run at John Madden.
Can I sign a player to your team? I think that's a fantastic option. Sorry. And John Madden, I think, is probably the most valuable third-line player in the National Hockey League. We had this discussion last week, I think.
Yes, we did. I put him in the elite league of Kirk Malpe, Darren McCarty, and Chris Draper.
An elite league, yeah. I remember that conversation. Yeah.
I put him right up there.
I also put Jordan, too, in that realm.
Yeah.
But
I think John Madden in Chicago was huge when they won the Cup.
Oh, absolutely.
Huge.
Absolutely.
And that guy did everything he possibly could for the Florida Panthers this year.
Yep.
Also, another name that, you know what, I think would be maybe not necessarily the greatest fit in the world for a team like Edmonton, but if he's available and I can get him for the right price, I'd totally try and take a run at Brian Rolston.
I was really happy for Brian Reynolds getting picked up at the end of the season by the Boston Bruins off of the Islanders.
I think he could add something for the young guys.
I think you would have to cut Ryan Smith to do that. I think they play the same role. To me, they're the same guys, but Smith is the constant Oiler.
Yeah, and ultimately, I would like to see a third line of Ryan Smith, Brian Rolston, and John Madden and get... No offense to Sean Horkoff on this one, because he's been a hell of an Oiler for forever.
All right, listen, if you're pushing Horkoff out the door and bringing in Rolston,
yes. I think that would be a fantastic third line, and I think with Rolston and Smith, you can get a good teaching of, because they got a hell of a lot of young guys.
Yeah, they got a lot of young guys to do.
And have a lot that not, you need more than just Ryan Smith to teach those guys. You can't have every guy going to Ryan Smith and looking at him for, hey, like, what's up?
Yeah,
you bring in a guy like Brian Rolston, like, I know he's definitely in the twilight of his career. He's not nearly
I like him as an effective third-line player. He can get 15 goals, 25 assists wherever he goes.
And the Oilers could definitely use that.
Yeah, that's true.
That is 100%. And so fitting him into that third-line role, you're looking at, okay, he's not just – helping guys like Taylor Hall, Eberle, or Yakupov, but, you know, guys that aren't going to get the forefront of the help from a dude like Ryan Smith. Somebody needs to help Magnus Pajari. Somebody really needs to take that guy. But he's still a big guy. Maggie Quireby's a big kid, and you know,
you get a funny the way you said that.
I know.
Somebody's got to help this kid.
Somebody does. Somebody has to help this kid because he had so much talent coming into the NHL. He was pegged with Eberle and Hall as, hey, you know what? This guy is going to help the Oilers become the next elite team in the league. And he has done nothing but pretty much nothing.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I really do.
And I think a guy like Brian Wilson could show him how he can use his size a little bit more, how he could use his speed. He's not the most powerful kid in the world, but you get him the right strength and conditioning coach like Taylor Hall has right now.
Yeah.
Put a little bit of bulk on him, get him flying at the right speed.
I'm pretty sure they could hook him up with that coach.
Yeah. And you're looking at a hell of a player. And then at the same time, showing a guy like Ryan Jones, who is still a young, going to be an excellent third-line player.
Yeah.
You have him learning the ropes from John Madden and Brian Robertson
equivalent right there.
Yeah. But, like, you have Rolston and John Madden teaching a guy like Ryan Jones the ropes of, like, the third, like, how to be that third-line hockey player.
But do you do that at the expense of costing Ryan Jones his third-line minutes right now? Because he's at a point in his career where he's got to just start eating up the minutes soon. If you don't learn by watching for very long.
I know, so, that's the tough situation in Edmonton right now because they have so many young guys up front that you can't slot anybody else in the top
front,
few lines.
It's an issue. Exactly. It's too much talent but not enough experience.
Exactly.
But who do you drop?
And that's where it gets into like that really weird situation where
I think
like, this is kind of one of the reasons why I was a little hesitant to pick up Yakupov because it's like, yeah, okay, it's another young, talented forward, but it also takes up that roster spot and like the whole process of I don't feel right about throwing so many young guys on the ice at one given time.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And what do you
like
do?
Chicago?
Unless you look at that as a stockpile of commodities and you move two of those pieces, be it a Pajarvi and a Gagne, or whatever the case may be.
I would never move Gagne.
I know your thoughts on Gagne.
I would love to move Henske, but I don't think anyone's going to take him for that contract. Granted, seeing some of the other signings that have happened over the last little while.
Yeah, that seems to be fair market value.
That seems to actually, as you said, fair market value. You could maybe move him.
Yeah. Can I take a player from our team right now, my team, and move him to your team? That I think would honestly help, and you might laugh at me, but a guy who's had a bad time with injuries since he arrived here, a guy who's currently a UFA and is a very valuable, versatile defenseman, is
Campoli. I was looking at him, potentially putting him in my top five.
I would like him over Carlo Koliakovo for all the same reasons. Like you could have the exact same discussion that we had 5 minutes ago about Koliakovo going there, except you get more reliability, which sounds funny from a guy missing a good chunk of last year, but with not a serious injury, just one of those things.
I'm not laughing at that because I'm honestly, I will tell you all honesty, he's just out of my top five guys that I'd like to see fitting in Edmonton right now.
He fits very well.
Edmonton could use the D, and he has that potential to be a good 3-4 defenseman.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And also very, very good in the number five spot if your young guys develop.
Yeah.
And not afraid to play that role.
If Justin Schultz becomes the next big thing, you can throw him up onto the top two.
Yeah.
And, you shift it around a bit and Chris Campoli could drop down into that five slot. Or he could stay in
the four slot. Yeah. He kills penalties. He moves the puck well. He's just a very well-rounded defenseman. When you look at it, he's not the best shutdown guy in the league. He's not the best offensive defenseman in the league. But he's good for 25 points and to be a plus player, which ain't bad for a defenseman. That's a legitimate NHL defenseman.
As I said, he's just out of my top five, and if you can get him for the right price, I'm more than okay with that signing. I thought he got a bad rap here in Montreal.
Yeah, he did get a bad rap. He got hurt.
He barely got a chance to start.
Exactly.
He got hurt right off the bat.
Yeah, I know. I just know a lot of
us right here.
You guys are level-headed Canadians fans. I'm not pointing the fingers at you guys, saying that you guys gave him a bad rap. I'm just saying. I know.
Never been accused of that before.
Highlight.
I know there are enough other Canadians fans who just rip that guy to shreds.
No, most people rip Cabrera to shreds.
I still don't think Cabrera is a bad signing.
I still think Cabrera is a hell of a player. I would. Okay, now this is
one. Let's move on to the Habs. No, let's do it after the break. We need the break sooner.
I'll throw one phrase that I will throw. This is one that.
Then give me 4 minutes to seethe.
This is one that both of you guys probably will hate me for saying.
Yep, already do.
But I personally think it. I think Cavalier is a better defenseman than Markov.
Get out of my house.
You're an idiot.
Right now.
Right now, because Markov can't walk. This coming from the guy who would not give the Calder Trophy to the guy who had the most points.
I know. I think Cavalier is the better fit for Montreal right now than Markov. Markov
is during summer.
I think Markov is done. I think even when he came back last year, he's not the Markov that he was. And I will totally admit, Markov was a hell of a defenseman.
He's been off for more than a year. He never got a chance to get back into it.
But I think right now, as much as everybody is hating on Thomas Cabrelet, and everyone is putting Markov on this huge pedestal,
okay, first off,
I think there's a very big thing that everybody needs to kind of take a look at that and go, okay, Markov is not the guy that he once was, and Cabrelet is a lot better than what people give him credit for.
Give him a summer to get back into shape.
Okay.
Let's see how he does next season.
2 points on that leading into the break. 1 point is that I actually don't have Andre Markov in the Canadiens' top defensive pairing this year.
Well, no.
I've got him sitting in the number 3 or 4 slot, depending on where the chips fall and where he comes back. And two being, I was ready to defend Thomas Cabrelet. You put me in a really funny position here because I was the only person in Montreal who applauded the Cabrelet trade when it happened.
I loved that trade.
Well, good then.
I thought that was a good pickup for Montreal.
Another shameless self plug. You guys can go ahead and check that one out on thehockeywriters.com. Search K Ross Reed. I'm under there. It's a good piece. Check it out. And most of the stuff I said would happen did specifically happen as the season came to an end.
All I'm saying right now. I think he's a better D-man than Markov.
He's maybe a better golfer than Markov.
We will dig into that after the break.
You are listening to the Off the Crossbar Radio Show, brought to you by BackSportsPage.com and aired on BlogTalkRadio.com. Check out our website at www.offthecrossbar.com. That's crossbar with a K. James?
Hi, I'm James Foster from CMRS Radio. Being on the radio, I need to make sure that I look good. That's why I go to Corner Cuts in the heart of Dorval, where looking good starts with your hair. At Corner Cuts, your hair is always priority number one. And the best part? You can get all the fancy salon styles without needing a bank loan to do so. Call 514-726-6047 to book your appointment today. Because at Corner Cuts, the only corners cut are on prices.
Hello, this is Jean-Guy Poutine. You're listening to the Three Anglos on Off the Crossbar. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Backsportspage.com. It has gotten a little ornery in here. We are getting ready to talk Canadians.
This is usually where the fights break out.
This is always where the fights break out. So Jaromir Jagr commenting that his first choice was, in fact, to come back to Montreal. Always wanted to play in Canada. What the hell happened there?
They didn't want him.
That's
the second time they passed up on Jagr.
Look, I'm looking at the Canadiens' top six right now. Obviously, the number one line stays intact. Cole, Pacioretty, Desharnais, fantastic year last year. Can't go wrong. The second line presumably will be centered by Thomas Plekanec. Heading into this season, Brian Gionta will be back. I've got him slotted in there for now. We'll see. You just can't break up that top line. They're so good. Gionta, probably one of the best three players on the team when he's healthy. But on the other side of that second line, what happens?
Colby Armstrong.
You've got Colby Armstrong recently signed. I don't mind the signing. He's worth the money we're paying him. He's plays a role that need filled.
For sure.
Rene Bork, maybe.
I forgot he was there.
Yeah, Brennan Frost.
Oh, man.
Signed a big deal.
I totally forgot Rene Bork was even playing in the NHL.
But you know who would be an awful lot better there?
Jaromir.
Why would you not take this guy on a one-year deal? Clearly still a very effective player. Clearly capable of setting an example, setting that precedent, as we saw in Philadelphia last year.
You know what? I would go as far as saying, Jaromir Jagr plays for the Montreal Canadiens. You're looking at Thomas Plekanec having a Claude Giroux-type hockey year.
Yup.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no doubt in my mind.
You're looking at, all of a sudden, Thomas Plekanec being one of the most elite hockey players in the entire league.
I would put him at a point a game. I would give him a Ray Whitney type year. I would give him a 75 to 80 point performance with Jagr as a line mate.
It would have been, I'd say, a huge... I'd say that would have almost been exactly what Montreal needed. Everybody's talking about, you know, size up front and down the middle, this, that, the other thing.
We've got that now.
I'm saying...
We're good now for size.
You put Jagr on your second line with Plekanec. You're now taking your second line of Jagr, Plekanec, and
Gionta.
Yeah. You're turning that into, I'll say, your number one line. And your number one line that you got right now becomes your secondary scoring.
Well, and honestly, comes up against far lesser competition when you're talking about the number 3 and 4 D pair and the number 2 shutdown line.
Exactly. One of those two lines has to play against the non, hey, we need you to shut down that line.
Yeah, one of them is not playing against Weber Suter if they play Nashville this year.
Well, no one's playing against Suter.
That's what I meant. This past year, obviously. But that's
like, whoa.
My point is, I was trying to...
You're not here for the first 20 minutes of the show.
I was trying to pick the top defensive pairing I could think of from the past season as an example.
name one better. I didn't phrase it right, but...
I understood what you're talking about. He just got an armpit.
No, you didn't.
Ooh. Oh, sure.
You laughed right along.
So Yager is overlooked. I assume because they don't want a temporary fix right now, Bergevin probably feels like this coming year...
How much is that taking for a year?
This coming year probably is not the year. So maybe he wants to see this group come together over the course of this year.
But you know what I think?
Build.
I think signing him helps.
Yeah.
I think you have a better... I think...
And I would take Yager at 2 years.
Yeah.
For $6.5 million, which is probably what he would have signed for if you offered him 2 years here in Montreal.
2.5 a year, yeah.
He would have taken that pay cut. He would have signed here for four for a single season. If you offered him the term on a 2-year deal, the chance to play another 2 years in the NHL, this guy's a competitor. He wants to play the game. That's why he's
here. He'll keep playing for the role of
He's earned his money. He's won his cups. He's playing because he loves the game.
I think him signing in Montreal would have been great because then at the same time, you can now... 100%, no doubt in your mind, use Rene Bork for as much as nobody in this city likes him. I know he still has some market value. You can now use him as trade.
I would use him as trade bait, but to be perfectly honest with you, since we did not sign Yager, in the event that we do not, I think Bork has more potential than people give him credit for.
He does.
If he can find his legs and get used to playing in this city... With a season of a job. I mean, we saw Kovalchuk struggle mightily for his first season in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a much better player going to a much lower pressure situation. Bork coming in here, he's got the chance. Here's a guy who scored back-to-back 27-goal seasons. He's a legitimate player in this league.
But here, I'm going to even make this one kind of go full circle as to why Alexander Semin is not the elite forward or number one free agent signing. Is that he's a hell of a hockey player, except only when he tries.
Bork didn't try very much this season as a half.
He didn't.
That's his problem. He doesn't try nearly enough as any team would really want him to. And for a team like Montreal that had as abysmal a season as they did last year, with all of this momentum that... Like, there's been a change in kind of the air here in this city.
Oh, there has been. Absolutely.
In the last 3-4 weeks. You know, for as much as everybody wanted to complain about the hiring of the coach, you know, Bergevin was a nice breath of fresh air here. You know, say what you will about the Michel Therrien signing and whatnot like that. But then bringing in guys like Scott Ellenby, Martin LaPointe, the rest of the crew, you know, I think Breeze was back at some point. People were pretty cool with that. And then you look at a lot of the signings that they had on July 1, they made a lot of really good moves.
They did. Absolutely. I think the signings they had were genius.
There's a huge change of just outlook on the Canadian season. There's actual optimism going into this year, whereas before there was sarcastic optimism going into this next season. And, yeah, hey, you know what? The Canadians look a lot better than they did.
Yeah, they're a 7-8-9 team right now.
Yeah.
They are.
I'll easily put them in that 7-8 spot. But a month ago, I was not having them close to the playoffs whatsoever.
No, but a month ago, you knew that the changes were coming at least. This wasn't a team that was going to stand pat.
But Canadians' history doesn't necessarily show that when they need the change, they'll go for it.
I kind of felt that with Bergevin coming in, he was gonna put his stamp.
I wholeheartedly felt the momentum
coming towards
and, the, and then, free, you know, same deadline. Old thing happens with the coach. And then it's like, okay, well, where's it going to go from
there? Yeah.
I was just being the kind of like, you know what, I'll step back, wait and see what happens. I like the moves they made. You know, I'm okay with every single signing that they did make. I'm not okay with the passing on Jaromir Jagr. But with all of that going on here in Montreal, I think a guy like Rene Bork could be... You're either going to get one of two things. He's either going to be one of the best players on the Montreal Canadiens this year, or he's going to be one of the downfalls of their forward makeup.
Well, I think because you have to have him, but that's where they went with a lot of depth. I feel like their entire third line right now, as it stands, is made up of players who could play a game on the second line and not look out of place. And I look at guys like Brandon Prust. I mean, the free agent signing coming in, $10 million over 4 years, which is, I think, a fantastic deal. Travis Moen obviously has played second line minutes in his career. He's got that capacity. He is that versatile. Colby Armstrong could do it. I wouldn't leave him there. I trust him much more as a third line player. And we're going to really be waiting on the development. I think this is the make or break year for Lars Eller. Does he? If he comes in confident and he comes in with some swagger and some momentum.
See, there's a guy. There's a guy in there on your third line for the Montreal, specifically the Montreal Canadiens, that I think you're missing out.
Who is
Ryan Wade?
Who is he? Is he better than Prust, Bowen, or Armstrong?
I think he's better than Armstrong.
Really?
So yeah. Then we pissed away that money, in your opinion? Because if Armstrong doesn't play on your third line, he's not a fourth line.
I think he's not a pure checker. I think he's a better hockey player than Colby Armstrong.
Based upon what?
I can't disagree with
that. I've seen the two of them play.
I don't even like Armstrong. Back in the days in Pittsburgh, I thought he was a dirty little punk of a player back then.
I'm a big fan of Ryan White.
Yeah, I like Ryan White. He's a hell of a hockey player.
And I think you're talking about make or break years. I'm not saying Armstrong, this is a make or break year for Ryan White.
I think this could be
that year for him.
I think it's not a make or break in terms of will he or will he not be a legitimate NHL player.
Because he's only on a one-year deal.
He's always going to be a third-year...
Ryan White.
Right.
Will be a third-line, fourth-line player for the rest of his... I think he's a legitimate pro.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the jury is still out on Eller. He will either be a top-two-line player...
Oh, for sure. No.
Or bust.
Well, Eller right now is a little more advanced and has a lot more upside. I keep going back to Edmonton on this one. He's very similar to Magnus Pajärvi in the sense that this has to be your year.
I think he's better.
No, that's what I'm saying. He's a better hockey player. He's further along in his development. But at the same time, this is that year where it's like, we need to see something out of you if we're going to keep investing in you.
That's very true, but I do often feel like Lars Eller...
Because he was a big part of that Halak trade.
Well, let's put it this way. Lars Eller is the same age as Justin Schultz. Now, he's been around the league a while longer. He came over as a very young kid. He completed his university education, got married at the age of 18. He's a mature kid, and he's been here in Montreal for a while, overexposed by the media. So a lot of times people look at him and feel like he's 26.
Mm-hmm.
He's not. He just turned 22.
Yeah. I'm just saying, looking at everything else that Montreal has in place.
Yeah. No, and that's what I said. I think it will be a make or break year for this team.
I still think Lars Eller will be a great hockey player.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree,
too. It's just that if he can't show it this year, it is not in Montreal's best bet to keep developing him.
No.
Try and get something out of him.
I wish we could move Desharnais to a wing. In my perfect world, I've got Cole, Plekanec, and Pacioretty as my top line. And again, in the perfect world, the second line is Gionta, centered by Eller, with Desharnais on the other wing. Now, Desharnais is too small of a guy to play the wing. We know he's going to get killed in the corners. We know that that's just the way it's going to go if he moves over there. So it is just wishful thinking. But right now, it's funny because we are short down the middle. We don't have a lot down the middle. But in the same breath, we have a little too much down the middle. We have too many slightly above average centers. When you go down that list, Eller needs his minutes. Desharnais needs his minutes.
Exactly.
Like it's
that's where
it's
you're running tough. Into a really weird situation.
And that's
here.
And that's exactly it. It's similar to the Edmonton situation, but obviously unique.
Well, yeah, but that's why I'm comparing Eller and Pajärvi, where it's like Pajärvi, who has that skill and possible ability to be a top six forward, in order for him to develop into that guy, he's going to need those minutes.
Yeah.
But looking at the Edmonton lineup right now, he's not going to get those minutes.
Yeah.
He can't keep playing in the AHL. He's doing pretty good in the AHL, and he's one of their top forwards down there. But he can't keep developing down there. He eventually has to make that run up, but he's not a third-line player. Just like Lars Eller is not a third-line player for the Montreal Canadiens. So now that you're really running into that weird situation.
Well, then on top of that,
you're throwing in Scott Gomez and you're throwing in Rene Bork.
And you've got Louis LeBlanc nipping at their heels, who will be a scoring presence in the National Hockey League very soon.
Let's hope they hang on to him.
But can he get his minutes coming up through this system? And that's why there was so much controversy with Louis LeBlanc last year when he came up, was, are you bringing him up to give him fourth line minutes? Because if you are, send him back to Hamilton because he's not that kind of player.
No.
He's not going to benefit from 8 minutes a game.
No, he needs kind of the... It's an awkward comparison because I don't think he's nearly as good, but he needs the kind of development that Evander Kane got.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Brought in and given the responsibility piece by piece and allowed to grow into the role.
I think Evander Kane is a way better hockey player, but I think Louis LeBlanc would benefit from that style of development in the NHL.
So then you get back to yet another reason that Michel Therrien was a terrible choice for head coach, which is the fact that he, by reputation, always leans heavily upon his first two lines, whereas the Montreal Canadiens are in a situation right now where
they need to be rolling three,
they should be rolling four.
They could easily be rolling four lines here, and your fourth line, you're looking at, Lars Eller,
right now, Rene Bjork,
and Scott Gomez.
I have Bjork on the second line. To start the season, I think he's legitimately, through the course of his career, he's earned a crack at it.
Okay,
if he drops the ball, I'm pulling him off there in the first 2 weeks of the season. He's on the proverbial short leash. But if he can put it together, he's fine.
So we're throwing – so your second line is Plekanec, Gionta, and Rene Bjork.
He was the worst plus-minus on the team.
Your third line is Travis Moan, Colby Armstrong, and Brandon Prust. Your fourth line is Lars Eller, Ryan White, and...
Patera Nokolainen, or maybe you bring up a kid. Maybe you give...
So you're not even pegging Scott Gomez into this lineup whatsoever.
Scott Gomez will either be in Hamilton or bought out.
He will not be bought out.
Last year, I honest to God picked Scott Gomez as a breakout player.
I remember that.
And based on fact, I mean, based on everything I had seen... Based on the fact that when you listen to his personal trainer talk, he's coming into camp stronger, lighter, faster than ever. He plays the preseason. He plays three games. He gets 3 goals, 2 assists or something along those lines, or maybe it was 4 games. He was really exceptionally good in the preseason. Then he gets the high ankle sprain. He goes down for a period of time. All of a sudden, he's playing catch-up again. And let's face it, he's too old to play catch-up. But if he can come in healthy with a solid training camp in the best shape of his life, you got to believe a guy who once had that ability still has that ability. So I think Scott Gomez got screwed out of what could have been a comeback season last year. Maybe he does it again. The odds of it happening twice in a row are slim and none, if you ask me. But no, I don't have him on the roster. And if I do have him on the roster, it's because he's back and he plays the second line. I don't ever have Scott Gomez on the fourth line of this team. He's not going to be a defensive reliability.
No.
He's going to be, you start him on the third if he makes the
sense,
or he works his way up to the second. Scott Gomez will either finish this season on the Montreal Canadiens second line or out of this league. And that's a fact. I mean, it's one of the two. He's not going to be anywhere in the middle.
For a guy like him, you have to give him the minutes right now, though.
You do right now. You got to give him every opportunity.
You give him 10 games.
You have to give him every opportunity. But I want to see him come back this year the way he came back from the summer last year. I want to see him confident. I want to see him smiling and talking to the media. And I want to see him with just a little bit of swagger, just a little bit of that confidence, a little bit of that, you know what, I am an NHL hockey player, and I'm a Stanley Cup champion, and I'm an all-star.
I'd love to see the guy succeed. But looking at that lineup right now,
there's no place for him.
No, I don't. Like I said, I don't have him on my fourth line.
Yeah,
the season starts today. That's not where he is.
He really does not.
But you give him every chance to earn it.
And my fear is that
put him on a rookie system.
Yeah.
My fear right now is because of the fact that he is such a huge cap hit that they're going to almost have to keep him in the second line spot.
$7.3 million over the next 2 years.
No, but that's. Listen, if anybody's out there has ever studied business, they know this is one of my favorite terms. If you've been talking to me for a while, that's a sunk cost. You cannot justify future action based upon past costs. If you lost that money, you lost that money. Cut him from the team, send him to the minors.
Take the hit.
Train him to Stockholm, whatever you got to do.
I still don't think that Montreal thinks he's a full lost cause.
How can they not? He hasn't done
anything. No, and listen, I think you give him the chance. I don't believe that he's a lost cause. I believe that chances are he's a lost cause. I mean, you got to be a realist in this situation. Stranger things have happened. He's a guy who was a very, very good hockey player. He hasn't lost his ability to skate. We saw him go coast to coast quite a bit. He lost that nose for the net. He lost that confidence. And to be perfectly honest with you, it looked like he was playing on one weak leg all season. If he comes back as strong as he did last year, avoids the injury in training camp, he could be a second-line player on this team. I'm not saying he's going to be an all-star. That's ridiculous.
No.
But he could be one of Montreal's top six players.
He should be.
He should
be. There's no bloody reason for him not to be.
Injury. It's always been injury with Gomez. And listen, he had a bad stint in New York. Sailor signed him to a terrible deal and then somehow pulled the fleece over our eyes and sent it to us. But he could do it. He could be a $3 million a year player.
I just don't see. I don't ever see him being renewed in Montreal unless he has an epic season in the.
Oh, he'll never be renewed in Montreal.
Unless
it's just
he
for the next 2 years.
He scores 20 this year with 20 assists and does the same thing next year. I give him $2 million to come back.
Two, fine.
Yeah,
he's
you
over that.
Spend him at seven. He's not worth Sidney Crosby money. He's not worth what he's making.
No.
But at the same time.
Yeah,
could be worth
a 40-point guy is definitely worth $2 million
exactly.
a year.
He
but
could
a 15-point guy is not worth.
Wait. He could earn his way back to respectability.
So now we get into the situation where you didn't have him on your roster, but now you're saying second line. So now you're bumping from your second line, Rene Bourque.
You got to trade him.
Yeah.
You don't bump him to your fourth line. You've got enough third and fourth liners. Right now, that is Montreal's strength is probably, if you look at across Prust, Moen, and Armstrong, that's as good a third line as you will find anywhere in the National Hockey League. If they could fill that gap on the second line, and if they could fill it with Gomez, beautiful. Beautiful situation to be in. That, oh no, I have a guy who scored 27 goals in two of the last 3 years, and now I got to trade him. Awesome. Go get yourself another defenseman. Go get yourself prospects. Start loading up for the future because guys like Lars Eller, guys like Max Pacioretty, they're going to be hitting their stride in a couple of years. And if you've got another Max Pacioretty coming up through the system to complement that, you're looking good for 5 to 7 years.
Speaking of looking good for...
I'm just looking at this and it seems that there's too many pieces in place for the long term.
Too many B pluses and not enough A's.
Yeah. But like you're looking at because I'm taking a look at it with guys like Gomez and Bourque in the lineup. You just signed Ryan White. Yeah, it's not a very big contract, so you can technically bury him in Hamilton. You can bury him in the press box or on the fourth line.
He's one of your top nine
like
forwards.
That. He is, and he deserves to be on that third line. But you just went and signed, as you said, one of the best third lines that you're going to get in the NHL.
Or do you put Blundin on the second line? Or Prust, excuse me. Sorry.
It's tough.
Yeah, good.
Out of all of this, you still need to give Louis LeBlanc, Noka Leinen, and Lars Eller those second line minutes.
Noka Leinen ain't getting them.
Noka Leinen's good.
But he needs those minutes.
He's not going to get them.
He'll get
them
elsewhere.
He's not going to develop here. And I'm sorry, I don't even have him in my lineup when I look at
it. I liked what I saw from him, too.
Sure, you could put him on the fourth line if he's willing to play that role. If not,
Setter.
Yep, have fun.
It's a weird situation because they have some pretty good young assets that I really, for as much as I'm not a fan of the Canadiens, I do believe that they'd have that, hey, you know what, in a couple years, these guys could be really great hockey players. It's just that right now they're almost, it's a bad comparison, but it's kind of the same thing where it's Calgary, where they don't want to admit that they need to rebuild more than what they're doing.
I feel like
they don't need a full rebuild like Edmonton needed, but they need a little bit more than what they have because they need to give these guys going forward, they need those minutes. Yeah, Gionta's a hell of a hockey player, but in 5 years, is he going to be better than Lars Eller?
No.
No. Exactly. With the situation that Montreal is in right now, I would rather give Lars Eller my second line minutes and get rid of Brian Gionta. As much as that may suck for right now, 5 years from now, that's going to be what's going to end up being the better bet.
I don't think that Gionta will be out because I think when he's healthy, he has a legitimate argument that, as the best hockey player on the team. I think what's more likely to happen is to see Bork on his way out packaged with one of Rafael Diaz or Yannick Weber. I think the Habs going out and signing Francis Bouillon to come back to Montreal. He's a legitimate NHL player. He's not on a two-way deal. He's not the bounce back. Yeah, of course, I would rather have Diaz. He's got more upside. But Yannick Weber has been...
Hell, I'll take Weber, too.
Weber's
been... You're just giving him away. I'll take him.
Hey, but if we could get some assets back, particularly up front, I would take Hemsky for Bork and Weber.
No, I don't want Bork. I just want Weber.
You've got to take Bork.
No, I want Weber in Diaz for him.
Yeah, no way. But look, Francis Bouillon coming
in. We'll get Columbus in on the trade and they can take
arguably, fine. Arguably, your top two right now, as I have it in Montreal, is Josh Georges and PK Subban.
Yeah. Okay.
My 3 and 4 slots, and you might laugh at the second choice here, but I've got Andrei Markov in there. I know you don't trust him, but we'll see where he goes. He's definitely a top four guy, as long as he's near healthy. 80% of Markov is a top four defenseman. So, in my number four slot, I've actually got Alexei Emelin coming up. I think the guy is a freight train. I love this coming up through the system.
Hey, I'm good with that, but I would rather him play with Cabrelet in my four slot.
I've got, and that's where I've got Cabrelet in my five slot with one of Diaz or Weber, which means
Diaz.
One of them has to be on the way out.
Exactly. And or you can put Cabrelet down with Bouillon. Because where does Bouillon come in then?
Yeah.
Bouillon's a 5, 4, 5, 6 defenseman, depending on where you are. Do they roll with 7? If they do, that makes sense. But then maybe
can't
Diaz.
Can Weber play up front?
Sure. Yeah,
he's not that great.
He's not that great up front. He's versatile. And, injury concerns dictated that it made sense for him to be there on a couple of occasions last year. But he is an offensive defenseman, not a defensive forward. That's his thing. So I wouldn't be surprised to see one of or both on their way out with that Bouillon signing. I like Diaz, and I'll be the first to admit I was dead wrong about Rafael Diaz this time last year. Ask anyone who talks hockey with me, I didn't believe in the kid. I saw him in the preseason. He looked shaky, weak on his skates. He looked unconfident, and he looked skinny and small on the ice. I thought he was going to be pushed around. I thought he was going to start making bad passes as soon as the pressure of a real full-on NHL season was upon him, and he didn't. I mean, I was just plain wrong. The kid stepped up.
Sold.
Great defensively, great offensively, skates well, put on probably 10 pounds since this time last year. I just plain like the way the guy plays. I thought Yannick Weber was going to be our next defenseman coming up through. He's not. Let's move him.
I'll give you a first and second round pick for both of them.
He has an RFA, right?
No, we're going to need a roster player. We need a second line winger.
What roster player do you want, though? Your roster is filled with players already.
Well, that's why Bork's got to go, too. And that's it. It's got to be a package. In my opinion, again, I'm obviously not the GM, but you started this segment by asking me to play GM. That's what I do.
That's why you give them the young
talent to sell them out. Honestly, that's what you've got to do.
And the only team that would probably take that deal would be, maybe Florida.
Columbus. Yeah, but you know what?
Anaheim.
There are teams. There are teams that could use. And listen, Rene Bork isn't a useless player.
Okay, fine. All right, fine. I'll tell you what. This will go into, my section on the trades that I wanted to get into. If I'm Marc Bergevin, looking at my current situation as GM of the Montreal Canadiens, going, oh, crap, I need to make this team better and fast. And you have both Diaz and Weber kind of on the outskirts of your D, and you have a guy like Rene
Diaz
Bork.
Diaz won't be.
What?
Diaz won't be for long.
No, he won't be. But if you're going into this season and you have your 6 D-men and neither of those guys fit into that slot, if I'm Marc Bergevin sitting down with Terrien and going, okay, Diaz and Weber, they're either in Hamilton or in the press box, I'm looking at that and throwing Rene Bork into that deal as you wanted, and I'm calling Anaheim, and I'm seeing what else I need to add to that deal to get Bobby Ryan out of there.
Yep, there you go. You don't need to add anything to that deal. The three of them?
Well, if Anaheim wants
three of them?
If Anaheim really wants to be whatever and not give up Bobby Ryan for those three assets, fine. But if they will take those three guys for Bobby Ryan, or if they, because you never know, they might want to throw something else in and get something else out of you. Who knows? Might be throwing a draft pick. I don't know. Exchange of picks, like a third for a fifth. I don't know.
Would you give me Louis Erickson if you're Joe Neuendijk for the same deal? Looking at the Dallas situation, we just said they're desperate for defense. You've got Rene Borg, who 15 to 20 goals, you're getting them. You're getting them. You're getting
Rene Borg,
second or third line player.
That's why I picked Anaheim specifically, because if you put a guy like Rene Borg, who is often, very often on whatever's here and there, you put him in a situation where you don't have the media scrutiny of a Calgary or
and
Montreal.
Also he's being coached by
like
Bruce
Luongo.
Yeah, he could be very – he could thrive in that kind of situation. So you're
– or we keep forgetting about this possibility. Rene Borg scores two goals in the first game of the season. Michel Therrien falls in love with him, and he starts giving him the minutes. And he starts feeding that ego. And he scores 29 this year.
I don't
– he's young.
Even if he gets those top-line minutes, I don't think he has that
– he did for two full years.
No, I don't think he has necessarily the drive to be like – The true number one.
No, he's not. Everybody has the drive to be
that
if they get on a roll.
We need the second line player. We don't need a true number one.
I know.
We need a true number two.
I'd still get rid of him if you could.
So would I. I mean, so would I. I'm completely on board.
I'd rather Lars Eller in the lineup than him.
But Lars is a center. Bork's a wing.
Teach Lars Eller to play the wing.
Hey, listen, if you can teach Lars Eller to play the wing, damn straight, he's big enough. Was he like 6'2"? 6'2", 198. I mean, the kid can play.
Just give him the minutes
and
on the wing.
As I said, Lars Eller is the same age as Justin Schultz.
23.
Think about that.
Hey, if they can put Lars Eller on the wing and slot him in with Plekanec,
I give him that second line spot.
That,
boom.
You're looking pretty good at that point.
Rene Borg, you can just pack your bags and go home.
I'm liking the idea of somehow getting Eller to play on the wing, playing those second line minutes with Plekanec and Gionta.
Yeah, you got to put him on the wing because you can't move Plek, and you're, as we mentioned
because
before,
then
you're not moving Darnay.
At that point there, that's where I think Gionta becomes even more valuable, because as a line mate with Lars Eller,
huge.
I think he becomes that mentor role for that player right there, and you're looking at not a bad mentor to have.
Nope, I like that actually a lot. All right, somebody give me Lars Eller's phone number. Right now, I'm playing GM. I'm getting him on this. Well, I'm on a roll.
Somebody has to teach Lars Eller to play with left wing?
Right wing.
Right wing? Gionta's a left winger?
I believe so.
Well, whatever wing.
But Gionta's quite versatile. He's played every position over the course of his career as well.
So
I mean, he can move.
Wherever Eller feels, whichever wing Eller feels more comfortable with,
yep.
Gionta plays the other one.
Yeah, well, I mean, Cole and Pacioretty are both left wingers in theory as well. That line worked out okay for us.
Yeah.
That didn't suck.
The only line that worked out.
But I would like that idea.
While still on the topic of
As a non-Canadiens fan, that would look very nice.
All right.
While still on the topic of the Habs, we should also mention that they did, in fact, lock in Carey Price to a 6-year, $39 million contract, plus a $2 million signing bonus just earlier this week.
Yeah,
so that's some good news for the Habs too.
I'm very much a fan of that signing.
Need to be done, had to be done. Right price, right length, right everything.
Price.
Yeah. I'm good for one a week. but no, I mean, listen. He comes out as the third highest paid goaltender in the National Hockey League. He's probably round about the third best goaltender in the National Hockey League. Goodbye, me.
Oh, he was the best thing going for them. I'd say he was the only good thing they had last year.
Right, except for Pacioretty, Cole, and
DeHarnay. Yeah, Pacioretty, Cole, and DeHarnay.
Like he had an off year just because the team in front of him.
I think Alexi Emelin had a fantastic year.
Yep.
I'm going to jump on that bandwagon.
I still think Price is, without a doubt, the best thing that the Canadiens have going for.
I agree, but you said the only thing.
Yeah, you said the only thing.
Surely the best. But
no, I said he was the only thing that they had good about them last year.
Right, but that one
was good.
Emelin, Pacioretty, DeHarnay, Cole.
I would say that everybody else besides Carey Price had a fairly, you know, they're good years here and there.
Patrick and Cole.
They had good okay seasons.
We'll say goaltending was the lone bright spot of all the positions then.
Granted, I'll totally give Eric Cole credit. He did something without Eric Staal.
Yep. You're just something
bitter about the Oiler days, aren't you?
Something that, hey, I don't think anybody thought that he could do.
Because
even
yeah, no, you're right. Even I didn't think he was going to have 30 goals this year.
Even playing on Carolina when not on a line with Eric Staal, he wasn't that good a hockey player.
But you know what? It's all about systems, and it's all about finding that role. Yeah. And he's a guy who apparently plays better when the pressure's on, plays pressure when the team needs him, which is fantastic.
He played every single game in that season two, didn't miss a single bloody game.
Yep, I like that a lot.
Well, it'll be huge if he can keep it up.
Well, yeah, of course, isn't that always the case?
Yeah, but like the fact that, you know, going forward, he had such a fantastic first year, a lot is going to be dependent on him. Granted, yeah, he had a great first season. I'm still not sold on him.
No, I am. I think you may see a drop in production. I think what you saw over the... I would agree that you could not be sold on him if his scoring came in bunches.
He was steady.
If you see a streaky scorer put up a year like that, I agree with you. But Cole was nothing near a streaky scorer. Consistency across the board.
Hey, look. I think he's a hell of a hockey player. You know, before he broke his neck when... he broke his neck the season Carolina won the Stanley Cup and came back just in time for the finals. Before he broke his neck, he was easily one of the best players in the league that year.
Yeah, 100%. I'll give you that.
I'm not taking anything away from his ability as a hockey player. It's just when he is – I keep going back to the whole Eric Staal thing, but he had a miserable time in Edmonton. And when he was on the ice, even in Carolina, not with Eric Staal, he was not the guy that he can be.
So that's just to say he's a chemistry-based player.
And hopefully that can
hopefully that
can stick this year. You know, he was juggled around a lot this year and was still able to come through it all. Like, they didn't put that line together. I think that line only came together halfway through the season, didn't it?
No, it was pretty steady from the beginning.
It was October.
They filtered Desharnais in and out, but...
But him and Pacioretty.
Yeah.
Okay. He was brought in. That's the thing. If Pacioretty is his new Eric Staal, fine. I'm okay with that because Pacioretty is a good hockey player. He's got that power forward ability.
Oh, yeah.
That Eric Staal. I've been a fan of Pacioretty for quite a while now. I think he's a great hockey player. And if he fits that chemistry slot with Eric Cole, fine. Hey, everything's golden and he will be that number one guy that you need. But if he can't keep that going, I think a lot falls apart on that first line.
Man, he's going
you're relying a lot on Pacioretty.
But again, it just comes down to me the way it was done.
Got the drive to do it.
It's not about the numbers at the end of the season. It is, but it's not only about the numbers at the end of the season. I feel like the consistency was good enough for Eric Cole, but I can trust that.
I'm still not sold.
I think you might see Desharnais end up on the second line before the year's out. I think you might see Plekanec move up between those two.
Maybe.
I don't think you'll see Eric Cole drop off.
No, all right. But he's my guy to watch on the Canadiens this year. Because if he can't do what he did last year, there's going to be a real problem.
Well, I think he's a fantastic second line player if that is the case. And then you've got Brian Giona to move up, or you've got whatever. I mean, obviously you lose that chemistry. I think the Canadiens' top five are very good. It's that sixth spot. It's that second-line wing that's going to be our killer. It's either going to make or break the season.
Someone's got to convert.
Eller could move over and play. We could move Diaz and Weber and or Weber or Bork. Petteri Nokalainen could be moved. There's potential there.
All right. So we've got 10 minutes left.
I've got thousands of free agents we have not yet gotten to.
But let's take a look at the trade route.
Because, let's take it.
Free agents, there's a bunch of guys out there, but nobody that's piquing everybody's interest here. But there are some names in trade.
Seven should be.
Seven should be.
Sorry.
I agree
with
you on
that. Stick that in there. Let's move along.
I 100% agree. What do you think about Semin as your second line player, left winger on the Habs?
Whatever, yep. I've got it. No. First off, no. If you put Semin on that line, they're a first line. Sorry, that's... Listen, I'm just saying...
You would like him.
Yes. Are you kidding me? I would pack Rene Bourque
back for him. At the expense of development of one of your younger players.
Yep. Yes, because of his age, because of where he is, and because of the fact that he is legitimately ready to be...
Can he survive in Montreal?
NHL player, yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Okay. He survived in the atmosphere in Washington under the shadow of Alex Ovechkin. What he's itching for, what he is dying to have...
Wants to be that guy.
That moment. He wants to be exactly that guy. And he deserves it.
He wants to be a marquee player.
Absolutely. And if you want to come to Montreal and play for any coach that's going to consistently go back to the well with their offensive stars, it's going to be Michel Therrien.
Maybe you should call Mark Bergevin.
Maybe I should call Alex Semin. Since I'm GM tonight.
Oh, well, there you go. All right. So also, as your GM, looking around the league, players are available for trade.
Yeah.
Who are guys that are jumping out for you? Obviously, the big name out there is Rick Nash.
Obviously.
Where does he go?
We play this game every week, so we'll get to it quickly. Chips falling where they are exactly now. Where does Rick Nash end up?
Philly.
Ugh.
I like it.
Don't.
Adam?
Montreal.
No.
Giddy up.
Montreal's not on his list. You have to sell the farm. You have to trade Carey Price to get Rick Nash.
Well, not just that, but he won't come here.
No, and
well, who's got the space?
He's not on their list. I say Philly.
Buffalo?
You have to remember, they have to be on Rick Nash's list.
I'm going to give you...
He's only got like five teams. Detroit, Philly, New York, Pittsburgh... And San Jose.
But he could also to see him in New York.
He could also approve any deal if it came to him.
Technically, yes, but I have also heard Carolina has actually put a deal on the table that Columbus has accepted, except Rick Nash does not want to go.
I heard that deal involved Columbus, Scott Housen, requesting Jeff Skinner and Carolina not being willing to put that up.
I have
information from different sources.
I don't know, but I heard Carolina was damn close.
All right. Are you ready for this one?
And Skinner was not involved.
Are you ready for this one? I think he will end up in New York. I give, as a dark horse contender that I don't think anybody else is banking on, but could be a legitimate possibility, he goes to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but how are you going to put him in Pittsburgh? He's not going to play. He's going to have the same problem as Stahl. You're not going to bump.
Nope, he's a left winger. He's going to play on the first line with Sidney Crosby. The second line is going to be Evgeny Malkin and James Neal, and nobody in the Atlantic Division is ever going to stop a puck again. That's what's going to happen if that goes through. But I think
that's going to be a tough deal to make.
Though. Dark horse, not on the list. If I'm going with my gut and I'm Rick Nash, I'll go to Vancouver. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
you can send Roberto Luongo back. I'll go there with Corey Schneider. I'll play with the Sedins on the top line. Then you've got Kessler as the second line. A lot of good pieces there. And I'll take a Stanley Cup while I'm there.
I don't even think Vancouver is trying for him.
I don't think they are either. But I think if I'm Rick Nash, I want to go to Vancouver. I think there's too much...
To be honest with you, if I'm Rick Nash, where I want to go... And as funny as that, it's still within the division. I would, obviously, depending on what happens with Shea Weber.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge,
well,
that's
I
a
just
huge
kinda,
part for Nashville.
If I'm
Rick Nash,
in
Nashville's looking really good. However, I'm thinking Chicago would be a hell of a place for Rick Nash to play.
There too.
But he's gonna have to pick up a goalie on the way, unless he can stop pucks.
I know.
You just got more of the
he's
same.
Pretty versatile.
Yeah, but no, Chicago's a better team than Columbus. They may not have a goalie in Chicago,
sure,
they're a better team.
Yeah, but if you're looking to go to a better team than Columbus, there's 29 teams on his list.
Even Edmonton.
Yeah, but you have a better shot of winning something in Chicago right now.
Or Nashville.
Because you bring
Nashville just lost
Nashville.
Nashville's going to Stinson's. They just overpaid for Paul Gostad. Suter's out the door.
Nashville's an interesting situation, and that's why I had
Ryan Suter.
I said Rick Nash's best bet was Nashville, like about 3-4 weeks ago or whatever like that. But Tampa Bay just recently picked up Nashville's backup goalie.
Yeah.
So that deal is now out of everything. You can't do that deal anymore.
You know what? Maybe he goes to Minnesota for Josh Harding and a bunch of draft picks.
Maybe. But I would think if Rick Nash gets traded to Chicago for whatever Chicago is able to give up for him, and they're able to keep the core of Taves, Kane, Hossa, and whatnot up front, with Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith on the back end, you can now afford to give up a couple of guys here or there to try and pick up a goalie along the way.
But you're not keeping all three of those players if you're getting Rick Nash. The asking price is through the roof on Rick Nash right now, which, again, I find ridiculous because Rick Nash has where's my paper? 8-1 points per game in his career, while Alex Semin has 0.86 points per game in his career, and they play the same damn position, and one of them, all you have to do is sign and not give up anything. Ridiculous.
It keeps going back to the Alex Semin.
Why is nobody signing this guy?
I've already brought up his name. I know Rick Nash is the big guy here, but if I'm trading for anybody right now, I'm trying to get Bobby Ryan.
Yeah, if I'm trading, absolutely, because again,
I think Bobby Ryan should be everybody's number one target in trade right now.
Only
not Rick Nash.
Not based on who's the better player,
but based on
who can give you the better value.
Yeah. What you'd have to give up to get Bobby Ryan is going to be a lot less than what you'll have to give up to get Rick Nash.
Yeah.
And a team like LA, a team like Philadelphia, a team like New York, who are already good teams, would have to give up far less to get a guy like Bobby Ryan.
So what about Bobby Ryan to Montreal?
I already
brought that trade up.
That's what I mean.
That was before the break, though.
No, it was like 20 minutes ago when we were talking about Rene Bork and the excess of Young D.
Oh, right.
I said if I am Mark Bergevin, I'm calling Anaheim to see if they'll take that trade for Bobby Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
He's a fantastic hockey player. And he's a great hockey player who somehow is underrated because he only plays on a team with Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry, and Timo Solani.
But Timo Solani's gone out that door.
Yeah, he's going out that door. Yeah, there is some kind of friction right now with
so
Bobby Ryan
buzz,
and that.
Why
and
is he
team.
Not moving?
I don't know. Something is not right. Like Bobby Ryan doesn't want to be there, and they don't really want
to be
there.
Or are they just playing the game? Are they just playing the same game that Columbus is playing with Rick Nash, where they waited to see where Parise would go, and now Anaheim is waiting to see where Rick Nash goes before they move Bobby Ryan? This is the year of the left winger free agent. Or the left winger.
Like
Montreal,
who could really use the left winger right now?
Yeah, doesn't have a damn horse in the race.
If I'm the GM of the Edmonton Oilers, I'm not really trading for Bobby Ryan. Let's build like Magnus Pajärvi, Alex Hemsky, and a draft pick.
Yeah.
If they'll take that deal and you'll give me Bobby Ryan. Hell yeah.
Then he can play on the third line in 2 years? Like, that's again, you can, like...
Well, no, I'll put him on my second line or even my first line, depending
on now.
Who he fits with.
For now.
Yeah, but if you're giving up Pajärvi and you're giving up Hemsky like that...
Your top six are still intact.
No, because Hemsky was in that top six. He takes Hemsky's spot in the top six.
Yeah.
Because you now have Eberle, Hall, Yakupov, Nugent Hopkins, Sam Gagne, and Bobby Ryan.
Yeah.
It's a small top six, but six ridiculously talented forwards.
I don't think it's going to. I think
it would never. It's never going to happen.
But to be honest with you, that's the only
reason why. Like I'm saying, because if I'm GM of Edmonton, because it's the only team I'd really want to be GM of.
I really do think that what you're going to see as this thing comes to part is Bobby Ryan ending up in one of the destinations that we all think Rick Nash is going to go. Bobby Ryan could end up in Detroit. He could end up in New York. He could end up in Philadelphia. And I think Nash is going to go somewhere completely unexpected.
Throughout all of this, I'm surprised there is not more Bob and talk in a specific team.
Who's that?
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
He wouldn't go.
Brian Burke is one of Bobby Ryan's biggest fans.
I
drafted him second overall behind Sidney Crosby.
Certain that Bobby Ryan wants that.
Playing on a line with Bobby Ryan.
Not about
Bobby Ryan's a left winger, right?
Yeah, he plays left and right.
Yeah, okay.
According to my fantasy hockey,
well,
I have him slotted. Lupul
and Kessel are both wingers.
Yeah.
So you can't really necessarily slot him into that, but if one of those guys falters...
I would bring him here to Montreal. I don't see him going to Toronto.
No, I don't see him necessarily going there, but I'm surprised there isn't more push for that.
Ottawa was making a huge push for Rick Nash. I wouldn't be surprised to see them land Bobby Ryan.
Consolation prize, not so bad.
Yeah, not so bad at all. That I'm not sure. I don't know what the package involved. But I know that they had one of the best offers on the table to Columbus.
Nash turned that away. All of the best offers to Columbus have been to the teams that Rick Nash doesn't want to go to.
So in theory, Bobby Ryan could end up there with a very similar package.
I'm just shocked that Bobby Ryan does not have more talk going about him right now.
It's because of Rick Nash, and it's because of Zach Parise. He's going through the same thing Alex Semin is going through, which is he's just not getting respect, and they will get the respect when they're the only names out there.
It just sucks. Because I really like him as a hockey player.
There's four or five legitimate left wingers on the market this summer.
There's a couple guys.
You have Semin, you have Nash, you have Bobby Ryan. Like, there's... It's tough to stand out in that crowd.
There are a couple more guys that could very well be traded. Adam, you've been awfully quiet over there in the corner.
Well, we're already out of time, and I didn't want to,
Who's your number one guy that you're trading for?
I'd love to see Nash. I think he'd be awesome. But, I mean...
Wait, here in Montreal?
No, in Montreal.
Take the one you don't have to trade for.
Yeah, he's free.
Hey, send him to Montreal. That'd be interesting, and if that could work, man, you're looking at it. Because you can sign Semin to a good term.
Oh, yeah, well.
He's still young enough that he's got the talent.
What would you pay him?
6.5. Hell, give him Gomez his money.
You know what?
Right now, I think you could probably get him a bargain. I think you could get him at 5.5.
That's what I was thinking, somewhere between 5 and 5.5.
I would give him 6 years at 30.
I was going 7. I would say in 7 to 5.5.
Yeah, I would give him about 6 to 5.5. But yeah, then
you're looking at around the same contract right there. But 5.5 cap in a year on the next 7 years.
5 to 7 years.
Yeah, I think with price sign,
the calculated risk
for the next little while, and you have Semin locked up for that next little while, depending on what your situation is with the D, because I personally think that they would need to keep Diaz.
Then you're looking at trading somebody straight off.
Because that's the thing. They can build that forward and they can keep that goaltender there, but if they don't start developing some of their younger D, because you can't hang your hat on PK Subban forever.
You want to
see me get run out of the city that my house burned down?
Yeah.
Why don't you trade Markov right now?
I'm in. I am in. Before anything, if you genuinely believe that he's hurt and that he's not the player he was,
I'm in.
Sell him off before anybody else.
I am more than okay with that.
Anaheim would love to have him.
Done. I'm more than okay. And you know what? I'm sure Koivu would more than lobby to bring Markov to Anaheim.
No, that's part of that deal. I want Koivu back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
He is not coming back. That is a pipe dream.
He's
that
not
is
coming back.
Happening.
He's not coming down. Packers will wish her now is first to grow.
Oh, what a magical day. What a great day for that.
Koivu's going to finish it out in Anaheim. He's not leaving.
He'll retire whenever Swan does.
He's not leaving there. But it'll be interesting to see going forward, where does Semin end up? Where does Rick Nash end up? Where does Bobby Ryan end up and everybody else that's still available? What are all these teams going to look like at the start of next season?
Keep tuning in.
We'll decide again next week. Yeah, we're going to decide it again next week because there ain't much else to talk about. That's damn sure. Adam, you were here, and I think you said less than 30 words.
I think you're about right, James.
K-Ross, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you very much. It's always a good time. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
And that means you guys have just gone off the crossbar.
We never did get back into the old Thomas Caverly debate.